And a very good morning to you. It is 10:35, otherwise translated to 25 to 11. And it's always a pleasure to chat to Helen Zille, the DA of FedEx leader. People have called her a whole lot of stuff. They've called her racist. I've known Helen for too long to want to believe that she's a racist. I don't think she is. I think she's outspoken. I think sometimes she should have asked and lobbied Twitter for more characters. I think maybe we would have gotten more context. But Helen Zille, the DA FedEx leader, a very good morning to you and good to have you on the show.
It's good to be with you, and I never ever thought that my name would ever be used in the same sentence as racist.
I know.
But that's the new world that we live in.
But this is why we're talking about this book, right? So, I remember, how long do we go back?
Decades, Tino, decades.
Decades, right? I remember having tea with you. Remember that little coffee shop?
I remember that was a long time ago.
It was a hell of a long time ago, and Helen was still trying to figure out whether or not she wants to, run for the whole DA leader thing. But here we are, DA FedEx chair. I mean, let's just call you the FedEx leader. I'm never quite sure how to say those things. But we're here to talk about your book, Helen Zille, hashtag. It's on a black background, right? So it's all, and this is white text, the first bit, Helen Zille. Hashtag stay woke, and that's all in caps, and it takes up about half of the front cover. Hashtag stay woke, and then go broke. Go broke's in red, and then the O is replaced by what looks like a bullet hole in broke, right? And then it says, why South Africa won't survive America's culture wars, and what you can do about it. So, what sparked you? We'll talk about what the book's about, but what sparked you to do this?
Well, my love for South Africa in the first place and wanting South Africa to succeed as a democracy.
Mm.
Now, because of social media and the power of social media, we just take over every fad in the United States and Britain. And the latest political fad there, which is very, very powerful, is what they know as identity politics. That is saying that your color, your skin color, is the most important thing about you. It determines your identity and should therefore determine the way you behave, think, vote, choose your friends, and everything else.
Mm.
Now, that is very familiar to South Africa. It's called apartheid, and that is what we all fought against so hard, this notion that we were all defined by our racial identity and had to sit in separate identity boxes as a result, politically, socially, economically, and every other way.
Yeah, but I mean, are we surprised, though, Helen, that people still think like that, given the past that we have? When I hear, I'm supposedly colored, right? And people will phone into the show and go, I'm not white enough and I'm not black enough. And you have, and it's not the majority of people, but you do find people going, but hold on, that person who's standing there doesn't represent me, probably doesn't understand my background. Are we surprised that that still finds its way, into the society that we have today?
Not at all, but what is surprising and what is tragic is that today it's considered progressive to think like that.
Mm.
Under apartheid, it was considered retrogressive, and progressive people used to really work towards non-racialism and building a community of identities that weren't based on skin color. So let's say if you were, and you mentioned the word, a colored Christian, you might have much more in common with a white Christian or an African Christian, a black Christian, than you would have in common with a colored atheist, say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the critical thing is, can we build bridges on other issues apart from skin color? And it was always progressive to say, yes, we could, like you and I have been doing all these years, like you do in your own family life and in your own friendship circle.
Yeah.
Always have.
Yes.
Like I have also done in mine. And that is what was always progressive. Today, a progressive so-called lecturer at the University of Cape Town asks students to explain in an essay why you cannot be friends across racial lines. And that is considered progressive. That used to be apartheid thinking. And so the tragedy of the new times is that apartheid thinking has come back in a progressive guise, driven by identity politics in the United States, where they are now even having separate graduations, arguing that black students need to feel free amongst themselves, to be able to express themselves at their graduation. That was known as apartheid in South Africa. Now, if we want to go back to apartheid in South Africa, we must understand that minorities will be permanently marginalized, and we will never have any chance in South Africa of building a new community of values and ideas to create a new majority behind the Constitution and for principles like non-racialism, the rule of law, and all of those critical things that are make or break. And the next risk, which I point out in my book, is suddenly a majority is going to say, well, we don't feel comfortable with this constitution, which is an imposition of colonial values. And so we're going to scrap things like an independent judiciary. And we've seen state capture taking us perilously down the road to that end.
Okay, well, Helen Ziller, DA FedEx leader, she is our guest. We're talking about her book, Helen Ziller, hashtag Stay Woke, Go Broke, Why South Africa Won't Survive America's Culture Wars. If you want to call in, please do. Hey, number to dial, 021-446-0567. Let me try that again. It's 021-446-0567 and WhatsApp on 072-567-1567. I was already corrected this morning for saying O. And if you'd like to just weigh in this discussion, please do. So, I think we need to have an honest discussion around this. But I,
my great friend Chef Aubrey is listening. I can see what's coming up on WhatsApp today, so he's listening. Chef Aubrey, why don't you call in?
Chef Aubrey, give us a call. Absolutely. But I've heard many analysts talk about, let's say, the Democratic Alliance, right? And they say, oh, it's the mainly white liberal part of the DA that wants to go back to what they were. And you have the Tony Leons, for example, saying Musima Imani was a mistake. I mean, which I think, sorry, with all due respect to Tony, what a stupid thing to say. This feeds into this perception, Helen, that, you know, it's a white clique within a particular party. I might not necessarily agree with that, right? But it's a white clique within a particular party that uses this woke thing to give themselves the positions, and they use that as an excuse to go, well, you know what? It's not about color. It's anybody can stand here. What do you say to critics who say that?
Well, the bottom line is that many of us have stood up for non-racialism since we could open our eyes. I grew up in a house that was very committed to non-racialism because my parents had felt the sharp whip of racism their whole lives and had to become refugees as a result. So the bottom line is there are many of us who are absolutely sincerely committed to non-racialism and to good, competent government and to the rule of law and to public accountability and all of these sorts of things. We're absolutely committed to these things. So it's got absolutely nothing to do with using a smokescreen, quite the opposite. The smokescreen is used by the wokes, and especially by the governing party, that says, no, no, we've all got to be represented exactly according to demographic numbers, demographic representativity according to race. That's got nothing to do with empowering the majority of black people. It's got everything to do with the ANC using an excuse so they can get into these key positions to loot every capital flow in the country. That's the smokescreen. It's got nothing to do with those of us in the DA who are absolutely committed to non-racialism trying to build up a party that stands for non-racialism. It is a smokescreen for the woke who pretend they're acting in the interests of the vast majority of black people, but who are actually trying to just mask their attempts to loot the country. Look at Elon Musk. He wants to start this major issue in South Africa. He can't unless he has black empowerment partners. That doesn't mean he's going to empower black people. It's going to mean some top people in the ANC just want a slice of the action. And they are putting it behind the smokescreen of this woke notion of empowering people, which has got absolutely nothing to do with that. It's about looting themselves.
But having said all of this, though, We know, you know very much what the history was. People forget about you breaking, you know, in terms of the Steve Biko story and the contribution you made, you know, a lot earlier. But we do have a history that has left a significant a portion of this population 5 kilometers behind the starting line. The question then is, woke aside, how does one deal with that?
Well, that's exactly what our economic justice policy talks about. We talk about every single intervention that we would make on a non-racial basis in order to serve and equalize opportunities and give a head start to genuinely disadvantaged people who want to use their opportunities, and not use that as a smokescreen behind the racial umbrella or the racial fig leaf to empower the ANC elite. Our entire policy speaks to non-racial empowerment. And of course, if you look at genuine disadvantage, 95% of the disadvantaged in South Africa are people of color, no question about that. But we still apply it on a non-racial basis. At the moment, for example, if you look at pensions or if you look at child grants, they're administered on a non-racial basis. The vast majority of people who get them are people of color, but they're nevertheless administered on a non-racial basis. And that is our principle, non-racialism. The minute you bring race into it, it's got nothing to do with empowering the poor. It's got everything to do with providing a smokescreen for the ANC to massively enrich themselves on the basis of their race.
Okay, now Tembi and Alexandra has given us a call. I'm going to ask Joe to put, we'll go to a break after this because I'll get into lots of trouble with my boss over here, Joe. But Tembi, I just want to give you an opportunity to comment on what Helen is saying.
Hi, Kino. And you know what? I do understand the frustration of the identity politics. And unfortunately, we are in South Africa. The country is built on apartheid that was based on black and white color scheme. So for us, I mean, for Helen Zille to be frustrated by that issue, which is understandable, unfortunately, we're not able to move forward because we say, kind of saying, you know what, let's forget about the black and white issues. Let's forget about the color. But then at the same time, color is what is holding us back in so many ways. You know,
are you saying move past race?
You know, moving past race. But unfortunately, that's not how we're going to move forward. Yes, it's frustration. It's frustrating. And I understand her frustrations. But how do we build a South Africa that is non-racial? But at the same time, we acknowledge that, you know what, we are, especially black people, are facing systematic racism.
How do you respond to Tembi, Helen?
Well, I respond by saying that it's not your color that is holding you back, Tembi. It is a failed economy that is holding you back. It is a lack of investment that is holding you back. I don't know what your educational background is, but that may be holding you back. The critical thing that is holding you back is a corrupt and failed state in which there is no investment, no growing economy. And if we had all of those things, we'd be soaring in South Africa today. So, Tembi, the ANC and its corruption is holding you back.
But hold on,
People must understand that.
But hold on, Helen. That's one part of the picture. Big corporates could be holding the likes of Tembi back. It's a discussion I have. You know, I happen to be in this particular space. And, you know, the fact that Golf Buddies, and I'm being very general about it now, but I've been chatting to business leaders, and it's a challenge. I mean, Borang Mahali will tell you the same thing. It's a challenge those supply chains hold certain people out because they've built relationships over decades. So while I agree that, the ANC is another story. I mean, I don't want to talk about them, but, you know, there's the other side of this as well. It's not only the ANC holding people back. The ANC sits and they're in partnership with a lot of big business, by the way. They've got a lot of caterers on certain boards. And then there's the supply chain issue.
Well, that's the problem, you see. ANC cater deployment is the root of the problem. Supply chain should work on the best competitive pricing. And that should be the issue. That is why, again, come back, the ANC is holding you back. They've had the deployment committee that has deployed people into the state, into the private sector, and then they enrich their buddies behind this BEE fig leaf.
Yeah.
That is what's destroying supply chain. And you must also not look at if, you know, the economy is its current size. I mean, what you fundamentally need is an economy that's growing rapidly. And if it was growing rapidly, there'd be far too much work, actually, for everybody. But nobody's investing because the ANC has this vice-like grip. And because they deploy their cadres everywhere, they control the supply chain. And don't believe that just because you're black, you're going to benefit from it. Not at all. Their buddies are going to be benefiting from it. But they'll use blackness in a cynical way to pretend that they are benefiting the poor when they are not. So the bottom line is you need economic growth. You need many more opportunities. You don't want a larger and larger number of people fighting over shrinking opportunities.
Okay. Tembi, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Thank you, Helen, for your comment. Thank you.
Thanks
Thank
a lot.
You, Tembi.
Helen Zilla, our guest today, the DA FedEx head. She has written a book. I'm certainly going to. I haven't read the damn thing, by the way, because I wanted to do the interview with you. I'll go and read it after I've had this discussion because it gives me a better insight into the book itself. And I also don't believe in giving away exactly what the book's about. Then why the hell go and read it in the first place? So, Helen Zilla.
It's a quick read. It's a quick read. It's less than 200 pages. And, you know, you'll get through it quickly. But I make my point.
This is me. Did you put some pictures in there, too?
No, I didn't put many pictures in there, I'm afraid.
Helen Zilla, the DA FedEx leader. It's a book you should go and check out. Helen Zilla, hashtag stay woke, go broke. Why South Africa won't survive America's culture wars and what you can do about it. What can we do about it? We're going to find out more. Why South Africa won't survive America's culture wars. Helen Zilla with us. But Thomas in Musenberg's given us a call. Hi, Thomas. Good morning. We're listening to you. What would you like to say?
Morning, Kino. The ANC has just been winning some by-elections and, in fact, increasing their vote. Does that not suggest to you that there's a disjunction thinking amongst the voting populace in the face of the fact that the ANC is absolutely corrupt, stealing from the poor, using taxpayers' money to enrich themselves and so on, yet despite that, they are winning in the elections? Does that not show that somewhere along the line there's a strategic mistake being made in how elections are approached and how the populace in general should be brought across to a right way of thinking? How on earth can they be voting in people who've been stealing from them? I really need this as a discussion to hear, where is it going wrong? Is it because these people don't read, are not aware of all this pillaging and theft from them? I'll leave it to you to comment on that. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thomas, yeah, I mean, I think the big question is, you know, what are the options that are available out there? But Helen, how would you like to respond to Thomas?
Well, it's a bit deeper than that, Kino, and
yep.
I've got to be
yep.
counting my words carefully here. But the bottom line is this. In Cape Town, the ANC plummeted to the lowest it's ever been. It was, you know, it didn't even get up to 20%, not nearly, in the by-election in Cape Town, which is very significant because it does show you that the urban informed population tend, and this was in a very poor community, tend to understand that the ANC is taking South Africa into a failed state. And they understand the implications of that in the poorest communities as well. So that is one thing that we should look at. Also, in by-elections, you often have special circumstances. So we had the ward in Hornley in Knysna, where a DA councillor had voted against the interests of service delivery and then defected to the ANC. And then she stood as their candidate for the ANC, a very popular ward councillor who had been a popular DA councillor there. And she defected to the ANC. And one must never underestimate the extent to which personal loyalties in smaller communities play a very significant role. But then I get to another critical point, which people need to understand. The poorer communities get, and the more they rely on social grants, and the more they rely on the ANC's patronage at elections like food parcels and other things, the more they believe that their only hope is to hold on to the ANC who's going to give them free handouts. So the tragic irony is that the more the ANC messes up the economy, the more they reinforce the dependence of poor people on the patronage network. The more they reinforce their political power. That is the great, great risk and the tragedy.
Now, you know, I mean, the one person that we have, I think, the utmost respect for, and I will openly say that because I think he's just a blinking brilliant leader, is Alan Wendy. Alan is as Premier of the Western Cape. If you look at how he's put his cabinet together, though, he has made sure that there is a mix of representation on his cabinet.
Sure.
So how does that dovetail with what you're telling us? It shouldn't be about race and represent. And maybe I'm wrong in this, Alan, so tell me to sit down if I need to. But he's crafted that cabinet very carefully, right? And it is a cabinet that is broadly representative.
Well, let me be quite frank with you. It's almost exactly the same as my cabinet was previously.
Yeah.
But the fact is, the assumption behind your question, Kino, is the assumption that if it was appointed on merit, it wouldn't be that way. Why is that your assumption?
That isn't my assumption. Hold on 2 seconds. I'm telling you that you said that it shouldn't be about race and representation, right? Because that's an ANC thing. I'm sure there are many competent people out there. And I'm sure there are many white people that could replace a black person, you know, in the cabinet and vice versa. Surely representation, Helen, plays a part, because there is an understanding that people do look at representation before they make, you know, a decision, some of them at least.
Well, I use the word diversity, which I think is better.
Okay.
Diversity is crucial for our country. There's no question about it. But, Kino, let me explain to your listeners how you put a cabinet together.
Mm.
You don't have the choice of everybody in society.
Mm-hmm.
You have the choice of the people who are elected on your list, and if you're lucky, that will amount to 24 or 25 people. And you look at the 25 people that have been elected to your list into that legislature, and you say, who are the 10 people on this list who would do these particular jobs the best?
Mm.
And I put that together,
and
I got flayed at the time for not having any women on it, but it was totally diverse in terms of race.
Sure.
And it's continued to be that way, not because we sit here and play bean counting on a racial basis, but because we say this is a job. Who in the list of 22 or 25 or 26 from which we can choose would be the best fit for that job? You can't ever assume that everybody who would be the best fit would be a particular color.
Sure.
And the nice thing is that we end up with diversity. So it's not as if we've got we can pick from a whole society. We can pick from 25 people. Shush.
And you also, as the Premier, can allow a person who isn't on that list to come in, right? Or isn't a on the list, but someone who isn't a member of parliament, correct?
No, you can't.
Can't you?
Not in a provincial legislature.
I thought I always thought you could. Well, listen, I love your fire, by the way. I love the fact that you speak your mind. Some people can call you whatever the heck they like. I reckon this is going to be an interesting read. I wish we had another half an hour to discuss this, but as you know, because we do know each other, I can ask you stuff. I'm not scared of you, and you're not scared of me. So, you're already number one on Amazon. Where are you at the moment? On Amazon.
I have no idea. Was also critically, and I must stress that, in particular categories. So it's not number one overall, it's in categories. So there's a category called Constitution, there's a category called Social Theory, there's a category called Sociology of Race Relations, all of that. And I got to number one on pre-sales in them.
Well, let's check it out. And I think it's important in a democracy to have these discussions. And we shouldn't be shutting people up because we believe they're this, that, or the other thing. So I encourage people to go out there, get the book, Helen Ziller, #StayWoke, Go Broke, Why South Africa Won't Survive America's Culture War.